Stone and Tile Show is proud to be sponsored by the National Tile Contractors Association. The NTCA is a leading trade association in the tile and stone industry dedicated to professional installation of ceramic tile and natural stone. With more than 1,500 members representing thousands of installers, NTCA works hard to be a strong voice for proper installation and qualified labor. The association invests in a professional staff to provide technical support and assistance and offers free educational seminars and regional training opportunities around the country. To learn more about what the NTCA can offer for you or your business, go to the website www.tile-assn.com. That's www.tile-assn.com. Good evening, folks, and welcome to the Stone and Tile Show. I am your host, Fred Houston. Now, before we get to today's topic, I did want to mention one thing that for some reason this week I've been getting a lot of calls for people wanting to sign up for the seminar that I have coming up here in Florida in July. I'm going to limit the number of people in that seminar, so if anybody is interested, I have a few slots open. Feel free to send me an email at fhouston@gmail.com, and we'll go ahead and get you signed up, and I can provide you any information that you want. If you have any questions about it, we can go over that as well. All right, folks, if you remember last week, I titled the last week's show, Who to Blame, and we talked about architects, designers, you guys, we went over a lot of information, and a buddy of mine on Vegas, and you've heard him on the show before, James Medina, gave me a call, and he said, Fred, we should talk about the job at the Encore and the win. So I got James on the line. Let me get him in here. James, are you there?
Hello, hello. I am here.
Hello, hello, hello. Nice and clear. Well, why don't we, for the new folks that are listening to this show, give them a little bit about your background, especially your background when it comes to the win and the Encore.
So, well, briefly, you know, I don't want to go into a long dissertation, but at Win and Encore, I was QAQC Project Manager of On-Site Development. So between the room remodels at Mirage, the building of Bellagio, the Win Las Vegas, and then Encore, got a little bit over about $10 billion worth of work under my belt as far as seeing things from the owner's perspective, contractor's perspective, general contractor's perspective. And that's when we got to meet as well, you know, through it all. And we've seen a lot, done a lot, you know, it's kind of crazy. We're like an Allstate commercial. So
I know exactly. Yeah, we had some interesting times. I mean, that's for sure. So last week, you heard last week's show, I'm assuming, right? When we talked about
I'm so sorry. I wasn't able to get on. I was dealing with a shot, so.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, well, been there, done that, and it's over.
Yeah.
So why don't you give us your input, when it comes to, what I like to call who to blame, and probably more so, how do you prevent that pointing the finger type stuff? And what type of stuff did we do at these projects out there in Vegas that kind of
helped it, didn't help it? Yeah, as far as like, I want to keep it like a kind of an open discussion, but I'm going to share a little something with you guys. And this is what was interesting to me when I was listening to the last podcast is I wish I had called in, but I didn't feel great. So I apologize to everybody for not being able to participate. But when you say like, who's to blame, it's kind of like a kind of an open statement right now when something goes wrong, nobody's really taken the time at the very beginning to make sure something didn't go wrong. So when something goes wrong, everybody wants to point the fingers and say, oh, you know, so-and-so didn't do what I told them to do. And the problem, I read a really great article. And it was a 2014 article from a very smart, intelligent guy in the industry. His name's David Leslie. And I read this article, and it was why is my building leaking, or why do all buildings leak as soon as they open or something? It was a really interesting article. If you read it, if you have time to, I'll send you a link. But basically he had it broken down as far as what is the the product knowledge when it comes to the owner down to the manufacturer, and then also the decision making from the owner down to the manufacturer. So you, if you look at a scale, you'd see the owner, the architect, the GC, the sub, the distributor, and then the manufacturer. And so the issue happens where the owner has very little knowledge of the products that they're going. They want, they have a design intent, okay? And this, what I'm telling and explaining to you is all going to come back to who to blame. So the owner has a design intent, and they have 100%. They have the money. They've given it to the architect. Say, okay, listen, make a contract document for me. Architect goes and he starts making a contract documents, and then he figures out once he gets to the construction set, sends it off a biddable set to the general contractor. General contractor then goes out to the subs, figures out which sub he wants after he's awarded the bid. And then that sub goes to the distributors and the manufacturers and gets his pricing, correct?
Right.
So what happens is the owner, if you look at it at a scale, it kind of dissipates down as far as responsibility as the design-making, decision-making, okay, from the owner having 100% all the way down to the person who's manufacturing it, which is about 5%, because they don't get to really say what you're going to put in the building. It's if you're chosen at that point. Now, on the product knowledge end, the spectrum is quite different. It starts off at the owner knowing 5% of the materials that are in the building, to the manufacturer knowing 80 to 100% of what is going to be put in the building.
Right.
So it's very crossed and very different. So now take us to the win. Okay. So we dealt with quite a few obstacles there. And we're going to put out a scenario, which we talk about usually in the class, which was the buffet.
Right.
And there was multiple items that were an issue at the time. And when anybody's looking at this, especially those who are listening into the show that have taken your course and are having a forensic way of looking at it, there are several things you have to consider when you look at a scenario, not just the problem in itself as far as what has gone wrong. When did it happen? What were the standards they were building to at the time? What was the materials that were used? Then you have to look at the specifications to see what was it actually specified to, what was actually used on the job site. That's a wicked turn, that head turn that we can talk about another incident. Then you're going to have also did the contractor build per the contract documents. So a lot of these, and interject anything if I'm missing anything, Fred,
a lot of these
factors come into play. Now, you can't just go out and blindly see, oh, the tile is cracked. Okay, so we're really talking about flooring, even though I dealt with a lot more. We're talking about flooring, and you say the tile's cracked, it's the installer's fault, okay? And any person with two brain cells would say, okay, well, the contractor's going to come back and say, I put in what you specified. So here comes the finger pointing.
Yep.
So before that even starts, if you're a forensic expert and you're coming into it, you have to go through each one of those line items I said. So this area that the buffet we talked about prior to was one of the last portions of that were installed, one of the last actions that was installed in Wynn Las Vegas. Now, there were multiple factors at that building line to the low-rise connection point that had transpired to them to delay the installation process. So, of course, every action that I mentioned about from the owner down to the manufacturer has different ways they look at a job. The owner, they want a beautiful building. They want their design intent. They want what it is. The architect wants something that they can build on their reputation and say, that's my building, right?
Right.
The GC, they go to school for a project timeline to push to get that job done.
Right.
Because guess what? Their profit margins are at the end. So if they can keep everything on a timeline and they build, they have their billable hours and they go at the end, they get their profit at the end if they finish early. The subs concentrate on the labor costs as they go through it and nothing else. The problem happens when nobody thinks about what the other action is next to them that they're connecting to.
Right.
So, okay, so we go back to that scenario of that buffet. I will give the what happened, okay? So you have a very high-end glass mosaic that has been installed on the substrate in these inserts around 3 cm marble that has been installed around that. We get a report that the glass mosaics, a few months after it was open, were popping off the floor. Now, the manufacturer of the glass mosaics, very well known, and the glass itself did not break. It was coming off of the backing, which was a polyvinyl acetate on a mesh, okay? And the interesting thing that you always teach us is look for patterns. Mm-hmm. Remember
yep.
that?
Yep,
so
I do.
Obviously, we start seeing patterns. And it was very odd to me. And so I said, you know, it's only happening in the inserts. The marble's not cracking. It's only happening where these inserts are. So there's roughly 20 inserts. So I took a percentage of the inserts and I did core drilling on each one of them to see exactly what was underneath that tile. Did a soak test and everything to see if the polyvinyl acetate glues would, you know, come loose and everything. So
right.
I come to find out that half of the inserts were performed with a dry pack method, compacted
okay.
cement. The other half was poured like lightweight concrete on the other half. So that was interesting to me. I said, why was that done? I go back to the contract documents. So there's like a lot of work that's done before you go and talk to any of these individuals, because it ultimately comes into a meeting where everybody hates everybody.
Yep.
And then you're given all of 10 minutes to state your case.
Right.
And Fred, you've been there way too many times.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
So what happens is, you know, you do the research and you come to find out that the way that it was designed in the contract documents was not installed in the way it was in the field. Now the question comes, I have to look to see if there was a submittal process. Did anybody mm-hmm. A, put an RFI, request for information, or B, put in a submittal to change the contract documents to the way they installed it? The answer was no. I couldn't find anything. So we get into this meeting, and I start mentioning all of this in this meeting. The contractor gets up and says, well, you know how much pressure we were under to finish this area. And I say, yes, I know. And he says, it was the last class, and we had to get this done, and da-da-da-da. I said, okay. Did you write anything to the architect or the owner stating that you had to change the method of installation? Well, no, we were in a hurry. I said, mm-hmm. okay, well, even in a hurry, you have to be able to state what the, you know, that you're going to change something. So this is where, if you're doing finger pointing, you can obviously see, kind of like when you used to watch the World of Poker and the percentage marks going up on everybody, and this
yep.
is more who's losing.
Yeah.
So in this instance, you know, the general contractor sat there. Now, the general contractor has culpability. The sub definitely had culpability. The manufacturer of the materials underneath did not have that much culpability because they were put in without their knowledge. They had no idea that, you know, this particular type of dry pack was going to be used when they knew the compressor strength was not adequate. Now, the pattern, we come to find out, if you take the class, you'll find out that this pattern was the exact distance of a scissor lift that would come in and check the bulbs in the chandeliers above.
Yep.
So they were soaking the floor when they were cleaning it. The scissor lifts would come in, which was exceeded the compressive strength of what they had put underneath, and that's where you got these patterns of shattered pieces of mosaic everywhere.
Yep.
Ultimately, the GC pressed on the sub. The sub did take responsibility for the replacement of each one of those inserts.
Right.
The long story short, in the finger pointing is everybody has to, you know, besides of this scenario that we just discussed,
right?
Each individual, whether you're a general contractor, an architect, an owner, or a sub, you have to take responsibility for yourself and your own actions of the things that you're connecting to. It's very important. If the owner and the architect had someone in place to stop them while they were doing it to say, hey, listen, guys, what are you guys doing here? If the GC had somebody in place that the contractor felt comfortable enough to put in a submittal process to change what they were looking at and knew what they were looking at and wasn't more concerned about the timeline, but the performance at the end, this wouldn't have been an issue. So there are many factors to avoid who to blame. That's why they have the submittal process. That's why they have these contract documents. But unfortunately, the world that we live in, it is very unbalanced, like that chart I was talking to you about, from the owner to the manufacturer and the product knowledge into the decision making. There is no even keel like between everything. So there really is a huge need out in the industry for ones to have pride in their work and speak up when something's wrong. But also we have all the tools before us to help us to make those right decisions. But that's my soapbox. You want to ask
questions? Yeah, well, I mean, absolutely. And, it's something I said during last week's podcast that, you know, even if it's a small project, not necessarily a big complicated project like a hotel or a casino, you know, put it in writing. I mean, you know, from my standpoint, when I go in and I do an inspection, and let's say I find out what you found out, and now the lawyers get involved, and now it's a whole other ball game, because they're looking to. I mean, quite honestly, I'm going to tell you, put it right out there, the lawyers are looking for the people that have the most money, the contractor, the sub, whatever, who has the deepest pockets. So they're going to want to sue everybody. But the way you protect yourself, if you're a sub, the way you attempt to protect yourself is to put everything in writing. And I'll never forget years ago, I had a contractor called me up. Hey, I'm Fred. I'm getting sued. I did this swimming pool in Hawaii, big, huge resort area. And I said, well, what's the problem? He says, well, it's cracking all over the place. I said, do you know why? He goes, yeah, I know exactly why. He said it was cracking. We told them we couldn't do it. And they said, no, you got to go ahead and do it. Same story that you just told. You know, we were under pressure. They wanted it done. They had a deadline. So we went ahead and did it anyway. And my next question was, well, okay, I wouldn't have done that. But secondly, did you put it in writing? No. Well, he's screwed, at that point. You know, the lawyer's going to jump all over that. So, you know.
No, Fred, years ago, there was a paragraph, which it has now since been taken out of the TCNA handbook, which I probably can understand why, because it really was, if there were issues with a substrate or they were not within the parameters or compliance with the construction, it was the contractor's responsibility. You know where I'm going with this. It was the contractor's responsibility to write to the owner and the architect. And that was in 04 or 05, around that era, around that time with the TCNA. And since then, I can't seem to find that in the book. So, though it's not in our guidelines, there is still a responsibility that must be taken on each individual who if you're going to look at it this way on the legal end, every large construction, and if you get awarded the bid and you're happy as a clam at the very beginning, just know that every single bit of information within that entirety of that project is going to be documented, it's going to be logged, and it's going to be used against you.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you clean off a floor, to doing a moisture test, to figuring out how much alkalinity is in it, whatever you do, it should be a timestamp, should have a date. You should know exactly what the weather is that day. You have to know what the trades are around you that are working. We talk about how we've seen floors that have completely popped off the substrate because prior to, the drywallers were trying to get a level four finish on the floor, and they were on the walls, and they were sanding the walls, and gypsum was underneath the marble, and they didn't clean the floor off properly. The gypsum expanded, popped the floor. Yep, popped the entire floor.
Yep.
So there are multiple ways of protecting yourself. And some guys think it's a waste of time, or they feel as though, the last thing I want to do is paperwork. Take a tape recorder with you. Your phone can record your voice.
Yep.
Buy an app that translates it into a text.
Yep.
You will not regret what we're saying right now to you.
No.
Believe me, you will not regret it. It is something that is highly looked over and very much neglected. I just helped a contractor out to do it the right way as far as doing the right testing, doing the right calibration on the moisture meter, finding the right moisture meter. It's a very complex installation in Vegas. It's a dual layer of a sound isolation mat that's between the slab. Like, so there you have a slab and you have the sound isolation mat, and then a set, like dry pack, and then let that dry, and then they're going to put another sound isolation mat and then the tile on top. But everything from the isolation to the perimeter to pictures they take to numbers on the wall to when they took the pictures, the temperature of the room, everything is being documented.
Right.
And they won't regret it, because they're going to have all the documentations that if anything gets complained about it, they're going to be able to have something to fall back on.
Yeah. And I want to get back to what you started out saying too, and that is that paragraph that was in the TCNA manual. And
yes.
I get this constantly. Well, you know, the contractor has to provide me with a slab. Let's say you're going with a slab that's suitable for tiling. Well, that's kind of true, but here's where it gets a little tricky. If you go on a job and you see slab or wall, whatever you're installing, is not suitable, that's when you need to stop and say, hey, wait a minute. I can't tile this. And you can't believe how many contractors will ignore that. And then when they get sued later on, they go back and they say, well, it says here that, you know, they should have provided me. Yeah, but you're the professional. You know, you're the professional installer. You know, you're the one that should be able to say, hey, wait a minute.
Fred, that connects us back to that same statement. We have to think about that other trade that was there before. Now, if it's not throwing them under the bus. It's like, listen, I don't have an acceptable substrate to install on.
Right.
You guys have to make it acceptable. The GC then takes that responsibility. Because remember, they're holding 50% of that responsibility. They're going to hold less purse strings on that individual that poured that concrete, because they did not provide a substrate that was acceptable per the contract document. So it is their responsibility to then, because they have the power over the sub, by about 20%. So they say, okay, listen, you know, come back in here, grind this down to the because every drawing shows you exactly what the exact floor height elevation should be. So if I know that I'm supposed to be given an inch and a half for my marble and my mortar and my anti-fracture, and you get only given me a half an inch, now we have an issue, because I'm not going to be able to hit the finished floor elevation. And then the doors won't fit. And then, so everything is there for a reason. Everything should be checked. And we had that incident on Encore. Do you remember when they were connecting the two corridors from Encore to Wynn Las Vegas?
Yep, I remember
and
this.
And I walked it. I walked it, and I said, hey, it seems a bit high. So we took a measurement. We found out the elevation was exactly the finish floor height was the top of concrete. I'm telling you right now, those GCs, they knew how to jackhammer, because I then brought it to their attention and I said, guys, what is finish floor to you? What does it mean to you? Maybe on a freeway, that's your finish floor. But here, finish floor means the top of the stone.
Right.
So you just poured, 2 inches of concrete that you didn't need to pour.
Right.
And so they ended up having to jackhammer that entire corridor up just to get it to a finish floor height or a finish elevation. So, yeah, it is it's extremely important. You always have to have somebody in place to actually check everybody that's going to be connected to you prior to and after. So when you're done, am I at the finish floor height so that the doors will open, so that the finishes on the wall will look properly? This is all extremely important as you go on, because if you're that one portion that has ignored exactly what the contract documents say because you have 20 years experience or whatever, you know, they say, you have to realize the fingers will be pointing at you when they say, who's to blame?
Yep. You know, it's interesting because I thinking back on that, that was what, 2008, I believe, right? 2008 through 2000.
Well, we did.
No,
we
it
did
opened in 08. Actually, opened in 08.
Oh, not yeah. 08. Oh, yeah, 08 to, yeah. Yeah, 2008.
Yeah, so I was out there for 2 years. Yeah, I was out there every month for 2 years, I think. And some of the things we've seen, we're just shaking our head. And, of course, I would write a report, and that became, you know, part of the documentation. But, you know, I think another interesting story with the Encore, I want you to tell this story. I know you've told this before on the show, but it's been a few shows ago, and that is the footprints and the leaking that occurred.
You know
what story I'm talking about?
Say it again.
The one where the guy where the you saw the footprints going down the corridor.
Oh,
showers are leaking.
Oh, Lord.
Remember?
Oh. See, I was trying to forget that, but obviously, that's always. So, okay, this is all right. I'll start from the beginning. So, when we were in the tower, man, you just made my stomach churn when I thought about it. Okay, so the tower. If anybody understands, like, large construction, sometimes certain architects can do only certain heights on a building. So some of the architects have the low rise, and then we have the high rise, which is the actual construction of the hotel portion. So that was done by a very well-known architect in California, and they put out this design. And, of course, my job was to review all the plans and make sure that we're going to have a successful installation. As I review the plans, I notice that they were going to be using a liquid system in the showers with a perm rate that was about 5. Now, I'm not going to get into the perm rates and everything, but it was very high.
Right.
And to make matters worse, they had zero pitch in the seat in the shower, and there was multiple things that were wrong. And so I looked at it and I said, hey, guys, we have an issue here. And I go and explain everything through. The architect, the head architect that was in, listen, you're making too big of a deal about this. You need to calm down. And I said, listen, numbers don't lie. You can take, you know, you can have all your opinions you want about me, but the numbers don't lie about the performance of the product. This is not right. The reason why I said that was we changed the one from the original Wynn Las Vegas at the very beginning to be a sheet membrane and a liquid product on the wall that was below 0.5. Okay, so this product they were putting in was 5.0. Okay, so if anybody knows anything about perms, that's a lot. That's a lot, okay?
Yep.
Okay, so go into the shower. I said, okay, listen, if you guys I was basically told, no, we have to use this product. I'm not going to go into why I had to use the product. But or accept the installation that they were presenting to me. I said, I don't want nothing to do with it. And they said, well, you don't have a choice. You're QA/QC. You have to deal with it. So I said, fine. And if I'm gonna have to deal with it, then you guys are going to document every shower. Every shower pad has to be signed off by the materials manufacturer. I want every shower pad flood tested. I want to make sure that it's done at the correct mill thickness. Mm-hmm. Because that's also important when you're doing liquid.
Yep.
So I thought to myself, yeah, good job, Jim. You did the best you could do, you know? And they're on 15, and the floors start on 5, so they're 10 floors up. And I get a phone call, and they said, hey, we're on 5, and we're cleaning these bathrooms, and there's water coming through the ceiling. And I said, how is that possible? Because I did all this writing. I did all this documentation. I did I did all the stuff that was necessary to make sure that I had a acceptable product, right?
Right.
So I go up to 5, and sure enough, there's water coming through the ceiling. Not on everyone, but a lot of them. And I come out of the room, and I'm trying to think. I'm like, man, where are these guys at? And so I take up the stairs on the edge, and we walk up all the way up to 15.
Yep.
And 15 had water in the shower pans, go down to 14, walk 14, and they just pulled the dollar plugs out of the shower pans. And as I come out of the room, there I see black footprints going down the hallway. And it's important to note that the shower pans that were above on 15 were a light gray color. The product that we're using was supposed to be dry black, okay? So when I went down to 14, I see these footprints. I said, you know, what the heck is this? And there's a painter walking, and he's got – there's footprints as he's walking. I said, hey, you got something on your feet. And he goes, yeah, every time I go in these showers, this stuff gets all over my shoes and my ladder. So what happens is they basically started flood testing, even though they had everything at the adequate thickness and everybody was signing off along the way. They were getting on those shower pans before they should have gotten on the shower pans. They should have let it dry and cure, as the product information says. Somebody was pushing those crews to flood test prior to it being dry and cure, which means they turned to a light gray.
Right.
It turns to a light gray, it re-emulsified. They pull the dollar plugs out after it passes its flood test, and guess what? The next trade comes in because he's got to do a can light in the shower. So he steps on it and compromises the thickness of the shower pan.
Yep.
Thus, you have 10 floors that had to be redone because someone would not wanted to fit a timeline and not understand what the performance level was to be at the end. Now, the kicker is, even though those were repaired, they were dried and cured, and they learned their lesson as far as the installation. Because it was a 5.0 perm rate, and they didn't listen to the person who knew what they were talking about at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
5 years was the manufacturer's warranty, okay, on that product. On year 6, 1 year after the warranty, I get a phone call, and they say, hey, guess what? We're remodeling the rooms upstairs. I said, oh, that's good. He's like, yeah, I remember when you were talking about, you know, these things and blah, blah, blah. I said, yeah, I guess you don't have to worry about it. He goes, no. You don't understand. The reason why we're remodeling the rooms is because all the studs are rusting in the walls. So that 5.0, to understand the perm rate, even though they thought it was nothing, it actually allowed the water to get through the wall, rust the studs, resulting into a entire room remodel in only 6 years in that entire tower.
Yep.
So it's pretty sad. It's real. It's something that you have to look at every aspect, especially when you're on the owner side, all the way down the manufacturer. Those numbers mean something. And sad part is the GC in the middle and the sub, they just want to get it done and then leave so they don't have to come back.
Yep.
So.
Well, the reason I wanted you to tell that story, actually a couple of reasons, but before I get to that, first I want to mention if anybody wants to learn more about perm rates, actually I think we did an interview with you a while ago on waterproofing, and you get into quite a bit of detail in that. So if anybody wants to go back and take a listen to that podcast, go ahead and do that. But the reason I wanted you to tell that story, that's a perfect example of when we talk about who to blame sort of thing, is
mm-hmm.
that Let's assume you did not catch that, okay? You didn't catch the guy walking across there, and you have a leak after the fact for that reason, and someone like me comes in, an inspector comes in and says, well, the installer did a crappy job. It's all his fault. It could have been, but not necessarily. In this case, it could have been the result of something like that. And I've seen that with cracked countertops, for example, where painters will actually stand on top of a countertop and crack it and, you know, try to blame the installer for that. So it's real important to not only do it right, that should go without say, but also to document everything, which I think we're beating this dead horse with a hammer, but it's very important, extremely important.
Yeah, the important part to remember is that when it gets to the level of a court, the legal portion of it, they want to find negligence. They want to see who was negligent in their actions. They want to see exactly who they can say, like you said, you point the finger who's at fault.
Right.
But if you've done your due diligence, if you've done everything you can to help you, not just yourself, but those that are around you, it will be accepted favorably, hands down. It'll be accepted favorably, but you have to make sure that you got to speak up. And even if you're a helper learning, even if you're an installer and not the owner of that company, speak up. There's nothing wrong with having a voice, you know, and having pride in what you do.
You know, let's see. I guess the same adage applies here as they do in the big thing that they were that campaign. You know, you see something, say something.
Yeah.
It applies in construction as well. You know, you see
it
something,
always has.
Say something.
Yeah, it always has. Yeah.
You know, it's great.
Yeah, we've really seen a lot. I mean, a lot of different things that have been going on. I recently looked at a shower, and this was interesting because you have to be very careful because especially when you're writing reports, it's never like a full finger point at somebody or something, right?
Right.
And
exactly.
you have to be very fair and unbiased. And what was interesting to me was that I think I told you about this. It was this house was only 7 months old, not old at all. I mean, not even that. It's still a brand new house. It should still smell new, but it smelled like a sewer. Like when you went into this bathroom area, it really smelled bad.
Well,
So I asked the owner, I said, you know, maybe you have a dry trap. You know, I'm thinking maybe you're not using this bathroom as much and you have a dry trap thinking that you're getting some sewer gas. That's how bad it was. It wasn't a dry trap. So along the wall on the edges, I saw that the grout was separating and I'm like, how old is this shower? He's 7 months old. Then he told me this one thing that it's going to make your brain tingle. He says, when I first took a shower, and he's a little taller than me, probably 6'4", 6' or so, and he goes, when I stood in the shower, he says, these tiles on the floor were popping off the floor. So I asked him about his particular color that's on the floor. You know, I'm being very generic right now.
Yep.
I said,
is there
a certain color on the floor? And he says, yeah, how did you know? And I said, what they put that on doesn't have the compressor strength to actually that installation shouldn't be on that particular product because it can't take the compressive strength. It's
right.
Like basically taking a shower in high heels on a foamy surface. So
yep.
We go back, I end up having to write this report. Now, in this report, I actually took the manufacturer's recommendations and how it says it in the recommendation not to install small dimensional mosaic tile on their product. So it's not their fault because they have it in writing, right?
Right.
Now, here's where negligence happens. This shower pan was replaced not once, not twice, not three times, not four times, but seven times.
Wow.
Seven times until they actually did a mud bed. But in the process, they also damaged that connection point at the wall.
Right.
The water was actually leaching through the wall and getting trapped where the P-trap was on the other side where the tub was because it was a tub shower combo. And there was like stagnant water sitting in this hole, this pit. And it was bad. Mold started growing on the wood, rusting all the screws and everything. So it was a domino effect of failure after failure. And so then I start tearing out the shower, and everything is spot bonded. Remember our conversation? What's the point? Don't spot. Well, everything was spot bonded. So, you know, the installer was partially negligent because A, he didn't know how to install tile and they hired him, but the GC is the one that hired him.
Right.
And B, nobody bothered to read the literature and they have classes to do this, to install it properly. C, nobody from, you know, the manufacturer's end that sold them the product ever walked a job to say, hey, you shouldn't be doing this. So it's going to turn into some class action lawsuit. I can see it right now into that area,
yep,
because they are not the only ones to have this particular installation done on their track house.
Wow.
So what is one person's nightmare is Fred Houston's next job. So.
That's right. I'll be in Vegas soon. Oh God. Well, you know, it's funny. You should, I know I've harped on this show, and I harp it on my class all the time. And, you know, you had brought up one thing, and that is read the damn label. You know, and the first thing that I read when I go to a label is I read the limitations, you know, whether it's,
yep,
a bag of thinset or, you know, grout or a tile, whatever, read what it says under limitations. If it says, don't do it, don't use this product.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. You know, it's as simple as that. And you'd be, mm-hmm, surprised how many times I've run across that in failures. Well, James, we're running out of time. Do you have any last minute thoughts before we close things up here?
No, just thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the,
oh, it was great,
the voice and you know, we're out there and there's people that actually know what they're doing. Don't be disheartened.
No.
You know, you have to, just like you said, read the label, take your time and speak up. That's all it is. And you won't be blamed.
And document everything.
Document
everything. You can't go wrong doing that. All right, buddy.
No.
I'm sure I'll be out there soon one way or the other.
All right.
So, we'll catch up with you then.
All right. See you then. Thanks.
All right. Take care, James.
Bye.
Thank you. All righty, folks. Let me play a few commercials here, and we'll be back right after this. Are you tired of lugging dozens of stain removal chemicals around to remove stains from stone, tile, or concrete? Did you know you only need 3 chemicals to remove almost any stain? From organic stains to inorganic stains, Dr. Fred's Ultimate Stain Removal Kit is all you need. The kit contains 3 reagents and includes a detailed ebook on how to remove almost any stain. So if you're trying to remove difficult ink or rust or simply coffee and other food stains, this kit is all you need. To order, contact Dr. Fred at 321-514-6845. One kit is $69.95 plus shipping. Thank you, Tough Skin, one of our gold sponsors. Marble etches and stains, Tough Skin guarantees it will not. Tough Skin provides a unique product and installation service anywhere in the USA with their proprietary stone laminate products. They protect marble countertops with an acid, oil, and waterproof guarantee. That's right, it's now possible to install marble, onyx, and travertine countertops without the worry of etching and staining from common household items like wine, lemon, coffee, or other acidic foods. People have been trying to figure this out for thousands of years, and Tough Skin Surface Protection has done it. Available in gloss and satin to match the countertop finish. Visit them online at toughskinprotection.com. That's T-U-F-F skinprotection.com to learn more. Alrighty, folks, we're back. I'd like to thank James again. And also, I might want to mention that when I do my stone and tile inspection seminar every year in Vegas, James comes along in one day and actually takes us on a tour of some of these failures, some of the ones he's talked about and some others. And they get really interesting perspective since he's been in the Vegas area for quite a long time and knows a lot about a lot of good inside information. So if any of you want to come out there and take the class in Vegas rather than one in July, then feel free to give me a holler. Alrighty, folks, that's it for this week's show. I want to thank everybody for listening. Until next time, keep setting those tiles, polishing that stone, fabricating those tops. Later, my friends. Are you looking for quality greenstone working products? ESP sells many lines of fine quality, environmentally safe products. Stone Pro, MB Stone Care, Bondstone and Touchstone Adhesives, more Stone Care products, Easy Care products, and Better Bio, which is over 80% bio-based and approved by the USDA. For more info, visit ESPSales.net. That's ESPSales.net.